Have you ever wondered what makes the difference between those couples who absolutely love to be together and the ones who merely tolerate each other in their old age? Hi, I'm Monica Tanner, wife to a super hunky man, mom to four kids, relationship coach, and intimacy expert. My goal with this podcast is to help you and your partner swap resentment for romance, escape the roommate rut, and nurture a bond built on trust, communication, and unconditional love. Each week, I'm sharing the secret strategies that keep couples madly in love, dedicated, and downright giddy about each other from the honeymoon phase to the golden years. I'm on a mission to crack the code of happily ever after, and I'm sharing those juicy secrets right here because an awesome marriage makes life so much sweeter. Let's get to it. Hello, and welcome to the Secrets of Happily Ever After podcast. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm so excited to be sitting down with my guests today, Brian and Jen Goines from Family Life. Welcome to the podcast today. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Yeah, we're doing really well.
Good. Well, so glad to have you here. Why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about yourselves and your family and family life?
Okay. You want to start with the family?
Yeah, I'll do
family life.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. So we're Brian and Jen Goines, and we live in Melbourne, Florida. We have been married for 27 years. And have been doing marriage ministry for probably about the last 17 years of our marriage. We have three kiddos. We have a daughter who is getting married, hopefully in the next year. And she's finally engaged. And then we have a 21-year-old son. He's in college. He's also engaged. And then, which is kind of a crazy story, but then we have a 16-year-old son who is still with us. So we still have one in our home for a couple more years.
He's not engaged.
And praise the Lord, he's not engaged. We really enjoy working with couples and doing marriage ministry together, but we also really enjoy our family and doing things outside. We live in Florida, so we have a lot of fun things we can do here, but I'm also from Montana, and so we do a lot of fun things there in the summer and in the winter, being outside, and we love to play games with our kids and with our friends, and so that's just a little bit about us.
Yeah. Our just so you know, our kids last weekend both got engaged about less than 24 hours apart.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
They were trying to set a record or what?
Yes.
Sibling engagements.
Yes.
But it was a little crazy. In two different states, one in Nebraska and the other one in Arizona. So it was a crazy weekend last weekend.
Yeah. Big weekend for you guys. Adding to your family. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're excited. So we can't wait to send them your podcast so we can set them up for success.
Well, I would appreciate that. Yes.
Yeah.
I do always wish that people would get the skills earlier, right? Than waiting.
Yeah.
It's actually a problem. And
right.
People are
It's like you never really know that you need anything till you're in pain, you know? So it's like when everything's great, you're not going to prepare for it. But it's when you start feeling a little bit of pain or disappointment and you start going, wait a second, this isn't the way it's supposed to be.
It's true. So, and it's actually easier to learn them when you're not in pain. So I always laugh because one of the best skills I think my husband and I developed, we learned it through ordering crumble cookies every week. Like we learned how to negotiate and like, you know, disagree mm-hmm. and things like that through crumble cookies, right? When the stakes were very, very low, but now we can use those same skill sets when we're talking about anything big in our marriage. So
That's really good. And it makes me hungry for crumble cookies.
So I know, right? I know. Mm-hmm.
So who's negotiating? Like, do you want more? I'm very curious about this.
So it's really interesting because my husband and I think are very different, right? We grew up, we have very different backgrounds. We have, you know, so there's a lot of, we have a lot of differences and we have a lot of opinions in our marriage, right? And so crumble cookies is like a great metaphor for the things we disagree on the flavors that are our favorites, right? Like he likes chocolate rich, like, and I like all the vanilla kind of lemony flavors, right? So, but also we disagree on the health benefits, the frequency that you should be ordering crumble cookies, right? The emotional benefits. You know, I feel like it's a fun date night. We should be doing it every week. And he's like the expense of the crumble cookies and, you know, on and the
the health benefits of eating crumble cookies every week? Like, do we get two so that we, you know, each get the flavor we like, or do we share one because it's not as many calories? So, you know, there's all these different things that we kind of disagree on. And it's a good practice, I think, to differentiate, right? Like, I'm not going to fold into his, you know, opinions, but I also don't want to beat him over the head with mine. And so it's good to practice these skills. I call it standing up to each other with soft power, right? So it's like standing up for the things that we want and desire in the marriage, but in a loving, you know, cherishing way to our partner. So,
oh, that's great. Love that. Yeah, we like to talk about compromise and communication, and when you have those differences, they don't have to divide you.
Exactly. Exactly. They can create passion and fun and help you develop into stronger versions of yourself who are better as a team together. So, yeah.
Well, good.
All so, with a crumble cookie.
Yeah, that's all from crumble cookie. That's amazing. So as we, you know, for us, I work for Family Life, Jen actually helps lead women at our church that we go to. And so that's her full-time gig, but we also teach with what's called Family Life's Weekend to Remember. So they're conferences that have been going for about 40 years now, which is hard to believe. They've been updated. You know, we just updated it about 5 years ago again. And we get about 50,000 couples that'll come through on these 3-day experiences at hotels all around the country. We got one there in Boise every year. And so, which is a lot of fun. We got to make sure you and your husband can go.
Yes, I'm definitely putting it on my calendar.
Yeah. And so we help couples like that with conferences. We also have podcasts. I host a podcast called Married with Benefits. And we just recorded season 4. It's one of these things where it's like, when I get a curiosity and I want to explore it, I create a season. And so we have 3 seasons all on questions every husband's asking, questions every wife is asking, questions every couple's asking about intimacy. So those are the first 3 seasons. And this last one we just did is all about the habits of highly happy couples. And so it's been fun to put that together. That'll come out in June. And then we create content. We do video series for couples where they can get in small groups, or they can have their own host, their own event, and they can go through material on marriage together and have questions and talk about it.
So fun. I love it. I love what you guys do. Well, so with all of that background, I want to get into, in your experience, what are 3 threats that couples will likely face in their marriage? Like what usually are the big challenges that couples are facing?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it'll come as any surprise. I mean, especially as you've done this, you've talked to enough couples to realize, I think just one is just having expectations that you don't realize, you know, coming into marriage, you start feeling these expectations that you didn't even know existed. Like for us, I know we joke about Saturdays. We didn't realize that we would ever have a fight until we had Saturdays. You know, I came in having a perfectly good idea of what Saturday should look like. But for some reason, Jen didn't have a good idea of what Saturday should look like.
Yeah. And that usually has a lot to do with your background, with how you grew up. Your family of origin has such a huge impact on how you view the world. And so if you come into a Saturday and your idea is a Saturday is it's a vacation day and it's your day off after a hard week, and you go right into laying around or swimming or doing your hobbies or whatever that is, that's where kind of Brian had his ideas, like watching sports and eating whatever you want to and things like that. And my family was for Sunday, and Saturday was still pretty much, especially the first half of the day, was a work day that we cleaned our home and we took care of our yard and we did chores and things like that. And so then all of a sudden when he's like 9 o'clock comes around and we're like, I'm getting ready to like, okay, we got to get to work.
Got the mop out. She's wanting to clean. It's all inside. Like, I'm okay if it's outside, but if it's inside, I'm like, I don't want anything to do with it. I want to get outside. So I think just those expectations and not really knowing how to communicate them. I think that's where we struggled early on too, is like, how do I even have a conversation about my expectations? And so I think that's one big threat that we got to learn how to navigate expectations. I think the other big one is just that hits all of us is, I don't think you realize how selfish you are until you get married. And that marriage has this way of unpacking your own selfishness. Like, I was really easy to live with when I lived alone. Like, I talked like I was a perfect roommate to myself. And then you get married and it's like, oh, no, I think of myself first. And trying to go from a marriage where it's, you know, I think a lot of people think marriage is all about, you know, somebody adding to my life versus how do we create a we? How do we go from me to we? And I think that's a big threat.
Yeah. So those are kind of the inward threats that are from within, your own expectations, your own family of origin, your own selfishness that comes out. But we also have we also have outside threats. Mm. And so we have social media that comes into our lives. We have maybe past relationships that are outside of our marriage, but could be our parents. It could be our siblings. It could be old romances or old relationships. It could be old patterns that are from before. And so those kind of things can come into our marriage and threaten them.
Or just difficult adjustments, like just difficulties in life. We live in a hard world. You know, it's not an easy world to navigate. And so when you think about, you know, whether it's you go through a miscarriage, you know, or you go through a job loss, you know, and there was 5 years into our marriage, I was a freelance writer, which really just means unemployed. And it's like, how do I now? I wasn't expecting that when we said I do. Jen was like, I didn't know I'd be married to a freelance writer that wasn't bringing in any money. And so how do you deal with that?
Which goes back to the expectations, right?
It's right. Like, yeah.
You know, you kind of have an idea of what things are going to look like. And then all of a sudden they don't, right?
And I think with the onslaught of social media, and if you're always filling your mind, you do get to see a lot of really great people on social media who seem to be doing really great things and might have really great relationships and go on a lot of great vacations and really feel like, can they know their purpose? And then you look at your life and your husband or your spouse and the comparison thing comes in and you just, we're not as good. We're not as driven. We're not as rich. We're not as, you know, whatever, influential. Our kids aren't as great or what, I mean, a million different things that you can compare yourself and it threatens the happiness and the satisfaction that you have in your own marriage. So that's a big outside influence that can come in. And again, like with parents, parent expectations or family of origin expectations, those can come in and, you know, maybe you're always going back to mom or you're always going back to dad or you're comparing your spouse to your parents. Those are just big threats that can, outside threats that can come in and cause some damage in your marriage.
Yeah. You know, I had one of the very first couples I worked with and it was so, rewarding, but really it was like my first, you know, how do you say it? Like soiree into how important the pull is of really seeing your marriage as unique and different from all other marriages was I had both of these threats were really at play in this marriage because I had a husband who was really, really working so hard to create the marriage that his parents had in every way. Yeah. And it wasn't until we like really started to recognize why he was so unhappy in his marriage. It was because he didn't marry, you know, his wife wasn't his mom and he in reality wasn't his dad. And they couldn't create all of the exact same, you know, scenarios that he had experienced growing up. And so as soon as he recognized that that was driving so much of his unhappiness, we were able to break that cycle. And he all of a sudden saw his wife with new eyes, like, oh my gosh, wow, I can, instead of, you know, working so hard to put her in this mold of who my mother would have been married to my father, like I can actually appreciate my wife for all her talents and skills and things that she has to offer that are totally different, right? Yeah. But he couldn't get past this idea that, wait, this isn't the marriage that my parents had. This isn't, you know, the family that they created. So really, it's so important to recognize, like, what's that kind of internal operating system? Like, what's driving, you know, my unhappiness or whatever? And then it was really easy to teach them the skills once he realized, oh, my wife isn't ever going to be my mom.
Right. Thankfully.
Thankfully. Yeah. She's this incredibly talented and wise and beautiful and, you know, very capable woman, but he had to recognize her uniqueness before he could start to appreciate it.
That's good. Yeah. I think it hits the whole thing of just having a vision for your unique marriage is what I'm hearing you say. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think a lot of couples come in going either having a negative vision. I don't want to have my parents' marriage.
Yeah.
Or they have this other positive, unrealistic marriage. Like, I want to have either the Hollywood, or I want to have what I think is my filter of what the relationship would be like, that guy, versus going, okay, we're unique. Jen's unique. I'm unique. What does our unique we look like? And how do we move towards a positive vision versus I just don't want to have that marriage. I want to have this unrealistic marriage. So I think that's one reason why we love creating things like The Art of Marriage, is that it gives us a chance to help couples create their own vision mm-hmm. for what that marriage could look like.
Yeah. And be excited about it, right? It's like we need to write our own story, whatever that mm-hmm. is. It's not. And what I've learned watching couples do this is your unique, like, marriage story, it's usually more beautiful than anything any Hollywood screenwriter could ever come up with, right? And so when you realize, like, we get to be the authors of our own story, our own happily ever after, it is really exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. The third threat that we talk about is also an outside threat, but it does have to do with a faith view mm-hmm. that there is an enemy that is out there. And if you believe in scripture, like we do in the Bible, that is going to be that there is an active enemy that doesn't want you to succeed in your marriage. Mm-hmm. And so the enemy in scripture is called Satan, which I know is kind of a big word and not everyone believes in that. But I mean, I think if you look in this world, you know, there is evil in this world and there is someone who something or someone who seems to be bringing us down as a culture. So however you view that, if that's an entity that you just think is evil, or if you think it's an actual person like we do, that is a part of something that's going to be attacking your marriage. Mm-hmm. And there are times where you're going to look at each other and say, what is going on? Why does it seem to be so hard? And that could be that because there's an enemy that does not want your marriage to exist. And one of the things that we always say is that the reason why that makes a difference is because then you could look at your spouse, even when you're in the most egregious, maybe not most egregious, but where you're in a disagreement, when you're in an argument, and you can say, hey, wait a minute, we have an enemy, but it's not each other. Mm-hmm. This person is not my enemy. There is someone out there who wants us to fail, who wants us to be fighting, who takes joy in our pain, and it's not you. And so let's take all of our, instead of taking our frustrations and our anger and putting it against each other, let's like turn back and look out and see how we can fight this together as a couple. And maybe even just that mindset, it will not make all your problems go away. But that idea of, you're not my enemy right now. I'm so mad at you. You feel like my enemy, mm-hmm. but you're not. And so how can we change some of our thought processes on my spouse is not my enemy? And so let's not fight each other. Let's try to fight what's out there mm-hmm. Instead of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. I like to think of that as a you and me mentality versus a us mentality, right? Mm-hmm. How can we orient ourselves against what the real problem is, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. So good. Okay. So we've got these enemies. And, or we've got these challenges, these threats. I have intimacy death traps, and your threats really overlap a lot with these intimacy death traps. But you guys also teach these must have habits for a healthy marriage. So how can we use these habits? Like, teach us the habits that we can use to kind of combat these threats that are out there.
Yeah. It's good. Do you have one you want to jump in with? Or?
Well, I think we need to lay the groundwork of where we get them from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds great.
A little bit about Shanti and...
Oh, yeah. So, we found a great colleague of ours. Her name is Shanti Feldhahn, and she has written a book called the Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. Mm. And she really has found it through data. She's a Harvard-trained researcher, and she really looked at, okay, looking at and those that are the pros in marriage, those that have, because the whole idea is like, who do you want to really learn from? You want to learn from pros. You want to learn from people that actually would rate as highly happy. And highly happy means that both couples are saying that they're generally believing the best about each other and their marriage. And so they're both feeling like they would qualify as what's called highly happy, versus a couple that would be just happy saying that, they might have, they're good, but one or the other is maybe saying not all the time, or it doesn't really happen. What they're struggling in some way, or there's just struggling couples. And so she's like, I'm going to look at what do the highly happy couples do, much like what Stephen Covey did with great leaders. And he found what were the habits of great leaders. And so there were about 12 secrets. We won't go into all of them. But this is what that last podcast that this past season was, is we unpacked every single one of those habits. So we'll just list a few of them.
Yeah.
But one of them was just that, that highly happy couples, they hang out. And it wasn't about, like, we tend to think of date night as the thing. And I think date night is a great thing to do. You have crumble cookies when you go out on your date night and generally have a fight about it. So, but hanging out was more than just about having a date night, right? Mm-hmm. It was, it could be both quantity and quality time.
Yeah.
For a lot of couples, especially when you have a young kids, because you guys have young kids, and it's like finding time.
We have teenagers now, but yes, I do remember the young kids stages. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Navigate, yes.
Have you taken the intimacy level quiz yet? If not, you absolutely should. All you have to do is go to monicatanner.com/quiz and take a 3-minute quiz. At the end, I'll tell you what level of intimacy you and your spouse are at, and I'll give you next steps to be able to increase your intimacy. Regardless of what level you're at, you can always make improvements. So do yourself a favor and go to monicatanner.com/quiz and learn about your level of intimacy and how to improve it.
And so if you have kids or you have stepkids and you're just, you're always moving in different directions, it's really being intentional about how do we find the time just to even hang out, just mm-hmm. to even, and maybe that is looking at your calendar and going, okay, we're going to these practices and we could just send one of us to go do the practice and the other one could stay home. Maybe you have to do that because you got to divide up the kids and all that kind of stuff. Or like one couple that looked at their calendar, they didn't have any time. They said, we go to this soccer practice and it's a 20-minute drive. And so to make sure we have time together, that was their time. They just started taking 20 minutes out of their calendar each week to drive one place and to drive back. And that became their opportunity to rekindle their relationship because they just were taking too much time with everything else and everything besides each other. So I think that's one of the big tips is highly happy couples find ways to hang out together. For Jen and I, we have this principle we call calendar your companionship. We try to do something 1 in 7, 1 in 30, 1 in 365. Once a week, we have a check-in coffee time where we just, usually it happens even more than once a week because yeah. our kids are a better age now.
Yeah.
But we have coffee and we just kind of lay out what's the day going to look like. And we have simple questions that we ask each other. And then 1 in 30, we do try to have a fun date night, get out, do something great. And then 1 in 365, just to get away just for the two of us. Do we do something to connect, whether it's a marriage conference or just a vacation where we can have some time together?
Yeah. So the whole point of the hanging out too is that, or if you think about it, one of the things that we talk about is that when you start, if you do have some disagreement or you're feeling like you are kind of going apart, then you're like, it's better if we stay separate. But mm-hmm. the reality is that it's better actually if you come together. Mm-hmm. And so even if you're feeling distant, it's so much easier just to kind of stay distant and to stay in your own rooms or to be out and in or to, you know, you're going to work, you're already apart a lot naturally, unless you work together, which some people do. But the whole idea is that the things that bring you together, and especially the things that you did at the beginning, mm-hmm. if you enjoy doing certain things together, starting a new hobby or reading books together or exercising together or whatever it was that you did at the beginning, those are the things that can still continue to bring you together, even when you don't want to be together. That's the thing, is that you have to take that first step of saying, even though right now, because there's something between us, I don't want to hang out with you, but those are the things, the proximity of doing things together actually can bring you back together.
Yeah.
And the reality is, as you think about the friends that you have, if they live next door or if they live 30 minutes away, it's like the people next door, because of proximity, are probably going to end up being the people that you do life with just because you're close with them.
Yeah.
And so when you start moving away from your spouse, say, no, we've got to start doing things together. Even if it's a little cold at first, it's not comfortable hanging out together and making an effort to do that, to have that relationship and that friendship, because that's what your marriage has to be built on, is your friendship can really help out.
Yeah. And so it's amazing how many couples can find it easy not to hang out anymore, which is sad. Mm-hmm. That's why you got married. You got married because you wanted to have a companion for the journey. Yeah. But because of, it's easy to get distracted with Netflix. There's plenty of things that hobbies, great, good things, work, that can act as an anesthesia for a bad marriage. Mm-hmm. And I can find myself living with a stranger and getting away from the very thing that would make me feel more happy as a person and more fulfilled is actually to have friendship with the person that I'm living with. So that's one thing, hanging out. The other one I think is really fun is that highly happy couples use sign language. And I thought this one was one of our favorite ones. And what they mean by that is that great couples have a way to remind each other that they're in it, even when they're at odds with each other. Like, I'm still for you, even though I don't like you right now. And they usually do it through a really simple thing, like a touch or some type of a sign or a sound that they
or a phrase
that they end up.
I was going to say, we use code phrases. I teach that too, but yes. I use phrases. But yes,
What phrase do you use?
Yeah, so like I kind of famously tell this story of my husband is very gregarious, right? And so he makes friends everywhere he goes. And early in my marriage, I was really insecure about it, right? Like I just, you know, I'd see him talking to some beautiful woman that I didn't know, and you know, and so we had, you know, the whole conflict resolution where I finally got really vulnerable, and I was like, it's uncomfortable for me to always see you, you know, talking to, you know, people or whatever. And so we came up with this code phrase. Like he said, part of that discussion was, I choose you. Like I always choose you. Right. And so we can be at a party, you know, we can be, you know, just hanging out or whatever. And if I start to get insecure, he knows, and he'll give me the code word, I choose you. Same on the other side, right? If I get really busy with something that I'm working on and I haven't had a lot of time to, you know, give him the type of reinforcement that he needs, and I can tell, you know, I'll always say, I choose you. Like, yes, this is really important to me, this passion project or something that I'm working on or whatever, but I choose you. And so when we go on, you know, when we, like, sometimes we're traveling with the kids and we're apart, you know, that's kind of just our code word for like, hey, I choose you. No matter what else is going on, I choose you. That's just one of them. But, there's obviously innuendo ones, but there's just things that we've picked up over the years that we know.
And when you say it, you can even say that when you're maybe even feeling a little bristled at each other, and it softens you, hopefully. Yeah. You know, it can soften you, and you kind of have a little smile and you roll your eyes and you're like, oh, I know you choose me. And all of a sudden, even if the subject is not totally taken care of, or you still might need to have a conversation, you kind of know you have that, like, we're in this together.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to make it, we're going to work it out. And the challenges is you still have to talk about it. If it's an issue that
definitely
has to come. Yeah.
But it's a good way of saying, like, I'm aware of you, right?
Right.
That's a good one.
There is one couple that, they touch pinkies. And there was another couple where there's this big football guy, they got interviewed, and they were talking about this principle of sign language or a phrase. And he's like, yeah, we've got one. And the Shanti was saying, well, what is it? And he's like, I don't want to say it. He's like, why? He's like, because I'm too embarrassed. Like this big hulk of a guy, you know, lineman. And she goes, no, really tell me. And so the wife is yagging him on, like, no, go ahead and say it. And so he's like, here, kitty, kitty. And so when high pitch. And when he says that, or when she says that, that's their way to go, okay, we're still together. We're in this thing.
Yeah.
Jen likes to give me a pat on the back, like with two pats, which I can't stand. I just, because it feels like it's super parental, you know, but it's become a joke to us. And so
it breaks the ice.
It just breaks the ice.
It makes us, you know, laugh a little bit, and be able to, you know, kind of make that reconnection without a lot of, just with an easy reconnection. That's easy.
Yeah. So. And I think one that we were out with, like, some couples, and it can be intimate too. You were saying innuendo, and there was this couple we were out with, and I don't know how we got on the subject. Just like, do you have like a sign for when you're in the mood or afraid, something like that. And the wife said, she's like, we do. And I've already done it. Like in this dinner time, when we're like, what is she? You know, we want to know what she did. Yeah. She's like, nope, it's just between us. And so, but Derek knows. And so it knows it's time to wrap up and let's go home. So we're all trying to go, what did she do? Did she say something? Yeah. She touched his knee. What was it?
Yeah.
So happy couples develop, and it's fun to develop. It's like most couples actually start realizing, oh, we actually do have something. We either have something, some phrase that we learned, or maybe it's from a movie or like the I choose you type thing. And just to, it's fun just to sit back and go, do we have one? Number one. Secondly, if we don't, what could it be? Like, mm-hmm. let's come up with something fun.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about the expectations, one of the threats being expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you're talking about sexual intimacy with a couple, there's a lot of expectations around sexual intimacy. I work with couples a lot around this, right? And one of our code words is hold you. And it comes from when our kids were very little, you know, they would just put their arms up and say, hold you. And you would know that they just needed some, you know, a little bit, they wanted to be held. And so, you know, that became a code word for us, like hold you means I want to snuggle. And the expectation is very clear. Like, I don't want this to lead to anything else. Like, I just need to know that you're here for me. Like, I had a hard day or something's going on or something like that. And so we can just look at you and say, hold you, and know that that's like our signal to comfort each other in the way that is most, you know, comforting without any other expectations of anything else. Now, that doesn't mean it can't lead to that, but it just means like, hey, I want some non-sexual reinforcement, you know, kind of love in this moment.
Right.
And those code words are so important. So sign language, I've never called it that, but yes, it's so crucial, I think, to these masters of relationship.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other ones. And again, you can have someone check out the podcast. It'll come out probably in June, all of these. And we talk about going to bed mad, how happy couples actually go to bed mad. They just wake up different, you know? Because there's a verse in scripture that talks about, or in the Bible that talks about, you know, do not let the sun go down on your anger. And so a lot of us have heard, you need to stay up and fight. And reality is like, you might be in a terrible place. You might be hungry. You might be tired. You might be mad, you know, whatever it might be. And you're not in a good frame of mind to even have that discussion. But what happy couples do is that they will go, let's call a timeout. Let's get some rest. Let's get something to eat. But they're very intentional about resolving the issue. Whereas I know for me, I can be more passive when it comes to conflict, and I'll go to bed mad and hopefully wake up and the problem's gone away, which it hasn't, but I'll just choose to think that it has. Like maybe she'll come back around to my way of thinking at some point in time. So we talk about that, unpack that. I think the last one that we'd mention, as far as habits go, is just that highly happy couples, they actually believe in kind of they have a higher purpose. And so, you know, I don't know how much of your audience would be considered faith-based, but it's amazing how many couples that realize that there might be something bigger than themselves, and how to identify that, not just in pursuing that. For us, we believe in God, and we believe that Jesus Christ was his son. And so it's like for us to be able to go, how do we connect spiritually over that? How do we align spiritually? How do we pray together? How do we, you know, go to a community of faith together? Having all of those things around you as a couple realizes you're not alone, that there's somebody that actually wants you to build this great family, this foundation. And when you actually see yourself kind of, you actually look higher, you look up and you see that there is somebody that is for you and wants you to move in this world, and to then also look out and go, who can I help with this message? Who can I show this kind of love, the love that God has for us, to others? And when a couple unites around those things and they take their eyes off themselves or about how they want their spouse to change or the marriage to work, all of a sudden you realize that you have something bigger to live for. So it's been neat to see how that unites couples, is when they're united around a common faith or a common purpose that's bigger than just their marriage.
Yeah, so important. And since you bring that up, a lot of my audience is very faith-based. So I'd love to spend just a few minutes talking about faith-based ways to handle conflict.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know one thing for me that has really helped us is for us to, again, going back to that idea of believing the best in my spouse, that they're not my enemy. Like, and just even recognizing that the Bible talks about that, and for us to come together and go, what are the principles out of the Bible that we can live our life by? So we're not having to guess. There's so much in the Bible about conflict resolution and about your tongue has the power of life or death. And when we kind of go to our default patterns, like whenever I get passive and I don't want to move towards Jen in conflict, it never works out for me. It never works out well. But when God says, you know, hey, you need to go, if you have an issue with your brother or sister, which Jen in that sense is somebody of faith, she's my sister, even though she's my wife, which sounds weird. But anyway, resolve the issue quickly, right? Resolve the issue quickly. And when you do that on a consistent basis, it becomes easier. And I would say that we've grown in that. I haven't been perfect, but we've grown in that. Right. So that's been super helpful.
Yeah. I think too, just remembering that we are called to be compassionate and kind, that we're called to use words that build people up and not tear people down, that we're called to tell the truth in love. And so we don't shy away from issues. We don't shy away from telling the truth to each other, but we do it in such a loving way. We realize that not everything always has to be said, that we can really take our words through a kind of like a marketing department, as one of our friends says, where you're like, how is this going to be presented in the best way? And so we take it through the marketing department, like how would a marketing department do this? And that's how we present our frustrations or just issues or topics that come up, and do it with kindness and gentleness and compassion as well, doing it really in love. Another thing, kind of taking the Matthew 18, You go to your brother or your sister, and I think this is, we're at a stage, I think, in our culture where if there's huge issues, that it might be time to bring another person, because after you go a couple times, then the scripture says take someone else with you. And so if there is, especially, I mean, for me, I'm very passionate about abuse in marriage. And especially in Christian marriage, which it happens, a lot more than we probably would like to admit, that a man or a woman, but usually statistics, I'm sure, are evening out a little bit, but just having a woman say, hey, if there's something going on in your marriage, like, yes, talk to your husband about it. But if you're being abused in any way, or if there's manipulation or gaslighting, things I'm sure you've talked about, maybe it's time to bring in a counselor or a pastor or a trusted friend and to really confront that, because although we want to love our husbands and we want to submit to our husbands, we don't want to submit to abuse and manipulation and things like that. And so it's really important to have that of like, don't be afraid to bring someone else into that conflict if it's not being resolved between the two of you.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, the Bible talks a lot about encourage one another, gather together. The Bible basically says that life isn't supposed to be a solo sport. And I've heard somebody say, you know, if you want to go fast in life, go alone. But if you want to go far, you know, go together. And we're going together, but to have other couples that are in our life with us, that's why we like going through studies with others. Jen's always in a study with other women. And we've done couple studies together before. And there's just something about being around other people, being vulnerable with your own pain. And it helps you realize you're not alone. There's other couples dealing with the same thing, and that you can encourage each other and hold each other accountable to go, okay, well, how can we change? Because ultimately that's what you want. I want to have a better marriage. You don't want to be miserable in your own marriage. So how can I actually change? Because I might need to change. There's something in me that's causing that pain and frustration. How do I change that? And having somebody else in my life that can be a better filter for me, can be a better mirror for me, that's been invaluable for us.
Yeah. There's always something about a community that maybe not always, but for the most part, as long as you choose the right friends, the right people that you want to be around that are going to build you up, there is something about that that holds us accountable and gives us encouragement and makes us go the next day, the next week, the next month, and we encourage each other together.
Yeah, so important, all of these things. Yes, yeah. Community. And I really feel strongly too about the idea of having somebody who is an advocate for your marriage, right? Like I always say, I mean, I obviously do marriage coaching, but it's not because something's terribly wrong with you. It's just because there are what I say about it is that you can't see the label from inside the bottle. And so you create this dynamic in your marriage And the purpose of coaching or counseling in that respect is to change the pattern from a destructive pattern to a self-reinforcing charm cycle, right? Is where we're moving in an upward direction. And a lot of times we can't see our own contribution to this pattern that we get stuck in. But if you have a neutral third party who is for your marriage, for the two of you, it's so very, very helpful into being able to bring out the, you know, this is what I always do. This is my go-to move, right? This is my contribution to this challenge that we're facing.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a friend of ours that likes to tell the story about when he was, his kids were younger, one of his kids came down because his parents were fighting or he kind of heard he was fighting. And my buddy Ed, he's like, well, I was just talking like I normally talk. I was just saying what I always am, my go-to move, yeah. Right? This is how I communicate. This is who I am. And his five-year-old son came down and said, Dad, the way that you're talking is causing the kids is causing mom to cry and the kids to be scared. And it was like, the kid was that mirror, was that, you know, that advocate in that one moment.
He was the older one. So he was saying that the kids were his little.
Right. His little suits. He's
like, so scared and mom's crying. And I'm getting teared up thinking about it because we love this couple and they're so amazing. But I mean, it shocked him. He's like, I don't want to be the person that makes my wife cry, causes the kids to be scared. Something I've got to change.
Yeah.
Even though it's my default, this is how I grew up. Mm-hmm. I'm a Cleveland guy. You know, he's from Ohio and he's a tough guy.
People are very predictable. It makes sense the way people show up in their marriage. Like, but I always say adaptive then, like they learned it. It was important. Mm-hmm. It probably kept them alive and who they were in their experience growing up, right? But maladaptive now. It's right. You're not fighting with, you know, you're not protecting yourself from the forces that you had to protect yourself from then. This is a new scenario. So yes, it's beautiful that 5-year-old could be that mirror for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm just glad. I mean, he had the courage to go, something's got to change. Yeah. And we like to say, you know, it's like when you think about your marriage, and if you really believe the problem in your marriage is the person you're living with, you really need to step back and go, just draw a circle around yourself and go, how do I fix the person inside the circle? It doesn't mean that they're not a part of that problem.
Right.
But if all eyes are on them, you know, chances are what you're saying, that whole analogy of, you know, you're inside the bottle, you're inside this bottle and you don't see the contribution that you're making. So that's good.
Good. So good. Well, it has been so fun to talk to you guys. So much wisdom in all the things you're saying. I have one final question. This is what I ask all the guests who come on my podcast. If you had the undivided attention of all the married couples in all the world for just a few minutes, what's the most important thing you could teach them about how their marriage can change the world?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to ask couples, like, how would you describe the marriage of your parents? What words would you put? What would you say? And some would have good words. There's a lot, though, that would have negative words. And they'd list those words out. And I go, okay, now imagine 15, 20 years from now, somebody's asking your kids, what marriage did your parents have? Because I think all of us actually want to be able to pass on healthy relationships to the next generation, right? So that's how we can best change the world. You think about it, the world gets changed in a family. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, become the marriage you want to have. Mm-hmm. So whatever words you really want to have, I want to have a forgiving marriage. I want to have an intimate marriage. I want to have a happy marriage. It's like, okay, well, what does it take to have those words? What does it take to develop those habits and principles that will give me the culture and the atmosphere? And then my kids 15 to 20 years from now would go, I want to have my parents' marriage. You know, I want to be able to experience that and pass that on to the next generation.
Yeah. The multi-generational legacy is so important. Thank you guys so much again. Where can my listeners find you, learn more about the work you're doing through Family Life and all the good things?
Yeah. Well, you can go to familylife.com is where you can find out everything about Family Life. There's a ton of articles and podcasts and conferences. WeekendToRemember.com is where you can sign up for one of our marriage conferences. If you go to the Family Life podcast page and you just look up Married with Benefits there, that's where you'll find our seasons and Jen's on some of them. She makes appearances here and there. And then we speak at the weekends to remember. So that's where you can find us.
And artofmarriage.com.
Oh yeah. Artofmarriage.com. The new video series that just was released. So that's a great one too, just to be able to understand again, what's that positive vision? Cause we believe that God created marriage, and if he created marriage, like any artist, he has an intention behind it. So what was his intention for what it could look like and what it could be?
And that's what the art of marriage is all about. Mm-hmm. And it's great too, because of it has, it's like a, it's like kind of like a little mini class. It's 6 sessions and it has workbooks and things like that. So that's one, and it's new. So we're pushing it. We're excited about it. And Brian worked on it and created it, but we haven't led one yet. And so we're getting excited. We actually have led one, but it was the old version.
Yeah.
We've led quite a few of those, but the new version we're getting a group together for in the fall. So we're so excited about that. So join us, have a look at it and see if it's something that you'd want to host in your church or your home. It's suitable for both of those venues, or a weekend retreat. I mean, a lot of people use it many different ways, but we're getting ready to lead it through a small group. We're going to have it in our home, but we're going to do it through our church. And so we'll have, I don't know, 6 to 10 couples mm-hmm. here for 6 weeks and walk through that material and use the workbooks and things like that. And artofmarriage.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys both so much, and we will see you soon.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you had as much fun as we did just now, I hope that you'll head over to your favorite podcast player and leave a rating and review for the show, or share it on social media. That's how other people can find this awesome content, and we can spread the message that happily ever after is possible. Feel free to check out my website, monicatanner.com, to find out more ways you can work with me. And as always, thank you so much for spending this time with me. We'll see you next week.